It's a wonderful opportunity to be here in New Orleans. Unfortunately, it is very cold here. I was in Boston last year, and it was just as cold, and I wasn't anticipating cold weather when I headed this way. So in any case, I just wanted to say thank you again to the caucus for allowing me to present this project that we've been working on for the past, since 2005, so about 12 years or so. I have nothing, no disclosures, no relationships to disclose. So really my talk today is to describe three principles of our community partnership, and I'll talk a little bit more about what our partnership is, identify the strategies to disseminate a health intervention, specifically two interventions that we modified over the course of the past many years, and to also discuss how these findings informed our current project of a dissemination plan. So featured here is our partnership. Now the Pili Ohana, which means, Pili means to bring together, and Ohana is family, so really a partnership of many people who were brought together for a common good. And our common good was to address this disparity of obesity. Now our partnership is made up of four community agencies or community-based organizations that were mainly from the island of Oahu, and the university partner of the John A. Burns School of Medicine, specifically the Department of Native Hawaiian Health. Now, because our partnership is so diverse, we have one Native Hawaiian Health System, which is where I'm from, Keolamamo. We have a community health center, Kokua Kalihi Valley, which focuses their health care over in the Kalihi area or downtown Honolulu area, specifically within this one specific valley on Oahu. And then we have two grassroots agencies, Kula Nona Po'e Hawaii, who focuses their work on the Native Hawaiian homes community in Honolulu. So they are situated, if anyone's familiar with Oahu, near Punch Bowl, so where the National Cemetery is, and their work really focuses on their community there. And the other grassroots agency is Hawaii Maoli, which is Association of Hawaiian Civic Clubs. Now, they are a nationwide entity, so they initially started their partnership on Oahu with identifying specific civic clubs to work with, and have since moved on to the nation or to the continent and are working with civic clubs in the California area. So, you know, early on in our partnership, we identified this need to develop some guiding principles. And amongst those principles, we realized that we really needed to define them. And included in these principles are things such as community ownership and empowerment, which is to include power and resource sharing. So we really felt, you know, we're all nonprofit agencies. We don't have a lot of money, but we have a lot of resources. We have people, power, we have technology that we can share across with one another. We also wanted to have this transparent process, so really having an open communication, not just between academia and community, but amongst ourselves. So we were very honest with one another. We had meetings where we flat out told one another, we don't like what you're doing, let's move on, let's identify a solution, and we did. And, you know, we have had changes over time. When it came down to the budget was split evenly. Of course, the academic partner who was really our technical assistance arm took most of the budget, but whatever was left, so the remaining two-thirds, is split amongst the partnership. And we found that to be fair and equitable. We also wanted to instill this really important aspect of co-learning. So we learned a lot from academics on how to conduct research. A lot of us didn't have a research background, so we learned from the academics on how to rigorously collect data and how to conduct focus groups and interviews. We also learned how to develop interventions and how do you modify these interventions. But we also then learned from one another. So because our communities, again, were so diverse, we learned that our group up in Papakolea or Kula, they had easy access to a population. So they just had to go and send out flyers to their immediate community and ask them, are you folks interested in participating? And of course, hundreds of them showed up. Whereas the civic club partner had more of a difficult time because they had to go specifically to each individual civic club and form a relationship with that civic club specifically to then bring them on board in being a part of this intervention. Another thing was that at each phase of our project, we took the time to critically reflect on the process that we took. We realized that, you know, every phase of the project was time-consuming, but we really wanted to understand if we learned anything from that process. So we took the time to reflect either with ourselves. So in our pilot phase, we actually took 2 weeks to reflect and go through this guided process of understanding what were things that we did right, what were things that we did wrong, and what were those lessons that we learned. That helped us to inform our next phase of our study. We also included some of our Hawaiian values. So aloha, or mutual respect and compassion for others, malama, or reciprocal caring for the physical, spiritual, and emotional aspects of others, na'awao, or seeking knowledge and wisdom for the betterment of humankind, pono, or maintaining working harmony between partners and the communities we serve, nalu, or flexibility to adapt to unexpected events and circumstances, as well as kokua, or lending our expertise to each other to meet the program's goals. So let me tell you a little bit about the phases of our Pili Ohana project. So as I mentioned, we were awarded by NIMHHD a pilot award back in 2005. Now that was 3 years of funding, and it really helped us to understand who we were as a partnership. It gave us the opportunity to conduct a thorough community assessment of the four communities that we were going to serve. That assessment allowed us to identify what was within our built environment. So, and as well as what resources were available to our communities as we went forward with developing this intervention. The findings from that assessment helped us to modify the diabetes prevention program. So we early on in the application process realized that we were going to use and adopt this diabetes prevention program. It was something that was already used in Hawaii with Dr. Mao's group. So we felt, well, let's go ahead and use this curriculum. It's demonstrated some effectiveness within our own local communities. And we did. So what we did was we modified it from 16 lessons down to 8. And we added some things that made it more culturally relevant to our community. So the initial 3 months, so it's a total of a 9-month intervention in this pilot study. The 3 months focused on weight loss, and the remaining 6 months focused on weight loss maintenance. And what we found was that all of our participants were able to achieve a 3% weight loss or more, and they were able to sustain that initial weight loss of 3% or more over the 6-month period. So we felt, okay, that's really great. This will help us to inform the next level of the next phase of our study. So what we did was we took the results and we went ahead and applied for a 5-year randomized controlled trial portion of the funding from the same funding source. But of course, before we went ahead and develop our intervention or implemented it, we took that time again to critically reflect and conduct focus groups with our community. What we wanted to learn at that time was what worked from the original pilot project and what didn't work. And so what we found out was participants really wanted us to be more engaging with activities. So, you know, DPP actually uses motivational interviewing and action planning and the such, but they really want it to be physically active and have family involved in their weight loss journey as well. So what we decided to do was develop 3 arms so everyone received the initial 3 months of weight loss intervention, or Pili lifestyle intervention, and then they were randomized into one of 3 arms. Of course, the first arm is always a control group, so they received a mailer. The second group was a DVD group, which they received the video recorded lesson that the face-to-face participants would receive. And then the third one is a face-to-face, and the face-to-face group were also given the opportunity to meet again within that month to do activities. So activities such as going to the bowling alley, going to the beach, going to the park, going on a hiking trail, or learning how to cook a healthy dish. So it was really involving community as being a part of this intervention or this process. It was a much longer intervention. It was 18 months. We had a very difficult time retaining all these participants. But we were still able to achieve that 3% or more weight loss, as well as improve some of the other areas such as blood pressure. And overall, it was a really good experience. We realized we'll never do a DVD arm again because that took a lot of our time with developing it. During this time, we also developed the second culturally tailored intervention, which is not on this slide. It's called the Partners in Care, Diabetes Self-Management. Now, this curriculum or intervention actually came originally from the Southwest in New Mexico. It went to Detroit and then over to Alaska, and then it finally came to Hawaii. It was developed by Jackie Two Feathers, originally it was her name. Her name has since become Kaimi Sinclair, and she's now at the University of Washington. But this intervention, we, again, did focus groups to kind of understand what did our community want with a diabetes self-management program. And we went ahead and modified her curriculum from her original design of, it's still 12 lesson curriculum, but we decided to deliver it weekly over 3 months, whereas in the past she delivered two lessons over 12 weeks, so one lesson every other week. So our community really said, no, we want to meet with you weekly, we want to engage with you weekly, so anything more spread out would not do for us. So this brings me to where we are currently with the Pili Ohana Project, which is our dissemination phase. Now, we're about to approach our final year of funding for this dissemination project. And what we did initially, and what I'll present to you more on, is the focus group component of this project. And so we conducted focus groups as normal for us anyway. And we also, as part of this dissemination plan, identified that community wanted to learn more about various topics within research or policy making. So, for example, we hold workshops yearly on community-based participatory research. We hold workshops on policy making and many other topics. We also, to identify new partners, we host cultural gatherings. And once individuals are ready, then we pair them up to become part of the mentoring project process. So really, we wanted to understand, how does a community academic partnership expand the delivery of two culturally tailored health interventions? Now, those two culturally health interventions are Partners in Care and the Pili Ohana Project. So what we did was, and these findings are specific to just Ke Olamamo. Now, all of the partners had to go through this process and conduct interviews as well as focus groups, but I just wanted to share what we found as an organization. So we conducted key informant interviews with community leaders of Native Hawaiian serving agencies, as well as just lay community leaders, so people who we felt were leaders of their respective communities, like in the rural communities on Oahu. And then we also conducted a focus group with past Pili or PIC participants. So the results of the key informants, they identified three areas of benefits, barriers, and challenges. And the benefits they found was that it increased knowledge about health, about healthy living, and that this increase in knowledge also improved the health outcomes for their community as a whole. It also empowered the community leaders to take some action within their community to bring this programming to them. Some of the barriers that the informant interviewees identified was time constraints. So in regards to how often they have to deliver the intervention, the amount of time it takes to prepare and then deliver the intervention, as well as effectively outreaching to communities most in need. One of the other barriers was cost. The intervention, there is a cost factor to it. If you wanted to incentivize it, that's a cost. If you wanted to make beautiful handouts, that's a cost because color printing is expensive. And some of the other challenges that these community leaders identified was access to facility, access to large enough space, access to supplies and equipment. They also wanted to express that one of the challenges is the flexibility of the intervention. Can they be allowed to modify how they deliver it, like the frequency and delivery? Now, with respect to the focus group participants, they identify benefits, barriers, and strategies as well. Their benefits was that they expressed that having that opportunity to share with one another their journey of weight loss and weight loss maintenance was so important to them that they really wanted and liked that support system that was built in. So built in with respect to their immediate co-participants as well as the family. They identified costs. Now, whereas the interviewees said that costs related to supplies and things like that, the focus group participants said costs related to food. Now, in Hawaii, everything is brought in, or most of our things are brought in, therefore we pay higher amounts of for fresh things. So there is a movement in Hawaii to do more farm-to-table approach, so home gardening and such. So that was a barrier, especially if our community was living on fixed income. The time constraint in regards to being able to balance our family life, our careers, etc. And if you have children, then it's the need to be able to balance their extracurricular activities. Some of the strategies that they identified, similar to the interviewees, was that the frequency. So as much as they love to meet with us every other week at some point or monthly at some point, they prefer to meet a little bit more frequently, so meaning weekly, which I found amazing because we tried that with other things and it wasn't so successful. But this group expressed that they really wanted to meet more frequently, as well as have becoming accountable for their actions. So action planning was part of the intervention, and they wanted someone to actually follow up with them weekly on where they were with their weight and where they were with their physical activity as well as diet. And they really wanted to be to have their family as part of the intervention, as part of their journey, and be in the class with them. They also expressed this desire to have physical activity built into the actual lesson plan. So, you know, really to understand how to disseminate culturally tailored interventions, it guides our ability to plan. It requires planning and assessment. So through these interviews and the focus group data, the partnership actually developed a readiness tool. So we wanted to know, are you ready, meaning do you have a pool of people that you could recruit from? Do you have a location and a facility? Do you have supplies and equipment? And if not, are you able to access these things? So if with this readiness tool, we disseminate it at our cultural gatherings to see whether or not the new partners are ready. And if they are, they are then paired up with one of the original partners, so one of the four original partners. And as part of that process, they go through a one-day training as well as have the opportunity to really learn from the original partners what their experiences were like. So I just wanted to take this last slide to acknowledge those who participated, both from the very beginning back in 2005 until today, as well as our community partners, the University of Hawaii, as well as our funding source. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna Marie. Getting ready for our last presenter, I think they may have to do a little bit of work with the computer, and I'll go ahead and introduce Dr. Maduka, which is actually going to be presenting, and then they'll actually get things set up with his presentation. Dr. Maduka is the University of Maryland representative at the National Community Committee and current chair of the National Community Committee. He received his BA and master's degree in journalism and mass communication at St. Petersburg State University, and his PhD in economics and information technology from the St. Petersburg University of Professional Unions in St. Petersburg, Russia. His current research involves STDs and HIV, as well as helping to address disparities in the Washington, D.C. border region. This morning, Dr. Maduka will be presenting on the National Community Committee for Community Voices Project. Let's welcome Dr. Maduka, and hopefully they can get his presentation going.